KNX News, 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Brought to you by LMU Loyola Law School.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
70 days away until Donald Trump is sworn in to become the 47th president of the United States. Thanks for sticking with us as we count down towards another landmark for the country. On today's show, President-elect Trump consistently promised two things on the campaign trail over the last year: sweeping across-the-board tariffs and broad tax cuts for just about every segment of the economy. Can he now pull off those pledges, and what will the impact be for all of us? But first this.
Trump continues to fill out his administration with mostly MAGA conservatives. The president-elect says he will nominate Republican New York Congresswoman Elise Stefanik to be the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Immigration hardliner Stephen Miller, who served in the first Trump administration and has been one of his most aggressive defenders over the years, will be named Deputy Chief of Staff for Policy. And Thomas Homan, who has helped champion Trump's mass illegal immigrant deportation plan, will be named as the administration's border czar.
One emerging big reason that Kamala Harris failed to beat Trump last week: Democrats simply did not turn out in 2024 like they did in 2020. Counties with the biggest Democratic victories in 2020 delivered nearly 2 million fewer votes for Harris than they had for Joe Biden 4 years ago. The nation's most Republican-heavy counties turned out an additional 1.2 million votes for Trump this year. Voters in liberal strongholds, like just about every major city in the country, simply failed to show up for Kamala Harris, and that was likely the difference maker in all seven swing states.
The vote counting goes on in states like Arizona and California to determine the final makeup of the next Congress. The U.S. Senate is almost set, with only the race in Pennsylvania between Democratic incumbent Bob Casey and Republican challenger Dave McCormick still technically ongoing, although the Associated Press has called the race for McCormick. Assuming McCormick does officially win, that would give Republicans a five-seat majority in the Senate. On the House side, Republicans seem to be in line for a narrow majority.
Across-the-board tariffs on all imported goods from China, that was a hallmark policy idea from Donald Trump, one he discussed at just about every one of his rallies. So now that he is soon to be in charge as president, he will have sweeping authority to implement tariffs. What does that mean for all of us? Clark Packard is a research fellow for trade policies at the libertarian-leaning Cato Institute. So, Clark, first of all, probably a lot of people, they keep hearing the word tariff, and I'll bet you a lot of people don't even know what it is. What is a tariff?
Yeah, that's a good question. Basically, a tariff is a tax that we pay on an imported product when we buy it from abroad.
But do we pay it, or does the person or company importing that product pay it?
Ultimately, the vast majority of the tariff is passed along to consumers. The best estimates that we have are about 90% of the cost of a tariff will fall on the American consumer.
So let's talk a little bit about estimates for this proposed tariffs. That I've seen one that said, you know, it will have a harmful effect on the American economy. So if, in fact, Trump is able to actually implement all of these tariffs that he's talked about, what will that mean other than us paying the taxes as American consumers? How bad could it get?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you know, some of the estimates I've seen, right, about a 10% across the board tariff and a 60% tariff on all imports from China amounts to about $2,600 per year in tax increases for the average American family. But beyond that, you would see foreign retaliation. So China would target, let's say, soybeans. And so if you're an American soybean producer, you're now going to face a larger tax when you send the product abroad. And you know, that's ultimately a bad thing if you're a exporter. But, you know, the Trump argument would be that, you know, we're going to impose these tariffs to protect the domestic industry, and that will allow more production in the U.S. And over time, that will sort of smooth out and prices will fall. I'm somewhat skeptical of that, but that would be their claim.
Wasn't there a time in American history when we did have substantial tariffs on products coming from overseas? In fact, much of the world had a lot of tariffs. And wasn't that right before the Great Depression in the 20s?
That's right. Yeah, tariffs did increase throughout the early part of the 20th century, leading up to the Great Depression and into World War II. And, you know, I think the United States learned a lesson from that, and sort of one of the pillars of the post-war order was to lower trade barriers both in the U.S. and then work to lower trade barriers abroad. And I think, you know, for 80 years that basically produced largely positive results, though the sort of distributional aspects of it weren't always perfect. Some people were hurt from import competition, but I think overall the American economy benefited from that low, you know, an environment where we were lowering trade barriers around the world and in the U.S.
But to be clear, to go back again to the 1920s, is it thought that that period of tariffs was one of the key reasons for the Depression?
You know, my understanding of the economics of that situation are that the tariffs sort of exacerbated what was already a pretty serious depression and then prolonged the depression as well. Because, again, you saw a lot of foreign retaliation. So American firms that were trying to send products abroad were hit with substantial tax increases. And then, again, American consumers paid, a lot of money out of pocket to buy products that were imported. And so, yeah, it was sort of a double whammy for the United States economy.
We are speaking with Clark Packard, a research fellow for trade policies at the libertarian-leaning Cato Institute. You talk a lot about, like, retaliation from other foreign countries. If we were to impose tariffs on them, they would impose them on us. I mean, are we talking about a trade war here?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we saw that during the first Trump administration, right? The Trump administration imposed a bunch of tariffs, and then a number of our trading partners retaliated against American products. And so, yeah, it led to a trade war. But this has the potential to be much larger than that because, you know, for better or worse, the tariffs that the Trump administration imposed during the first term were much more narrow. They didn't apply to every product. They certainly applied to a lot of products from China, but we weren't imposing indiscriminate tariffs on imports from Canada or Mexico or the United Kingdom or the EU. But what he's talking about now, again, is substantially different in that he would apply this tariff across the board, whether the country's a friendly nation and an ally or an unfriendly country like China or Russia or whomever.
But some countries having a tariff slapped on their products are going to be more of an impact on us, obviously, than others. I mean, for example, tariffs on, you know, imports from France is not going to be that much of a difference for the average American consumer, unless they're big on I don't know, what are the French export anyway? But on the other hand, Mexico and China, if you go through any store, you're going to probably find a substantial number of items that are at one point or another made or distributed or assembled in China, especially if they come from Mexico or China, right?
Yeah, that's right. You know, the U.S.'s three largest trading partners, perhaps unsurprisingly, are Canada, Mexico, and China. And, you know, I think a lot of it is the proximity with Mexico and Canada. But, you know, China is a manufacturing powerhouse. And so we do end up with a lot of products coming from China.
Circling back to the question that Charles brought up about the tariffs that were in place prior to the Great Depression, could you see President-elect Trump's tariffs, should they all be implemented, leading us into a recession?
I do think that that's potentially likely, and that's one of my grave concerns, that it has the potential to kind of spiral out of control and lead to a really broad trade war, and then that triggers potentially a very serious recession in the U.S. and around the world. And, you know, obviously a lot of people get hurt economically when these things happen, which is why I think overwhelmingly economists are largely opposed to the use of tariffs, particularly indiscriminate sort of across the board tariffs.
You know, I was looking up while you were talking. I had mentioned, you know, what do we get from France that we have to worry about tariffs? And, of course, the answer is obvious. Wine.
Wine. Come
yeah.
on.
So, wine and cheese.
Yeah, wine and cheese. So we're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah, we are. You know, on a not so funny note, we were talking about the potential tariffs for Mexico. What would that do to the trade agreement, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement?
That's an excellent question. Under the terms of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement, the U.S. couldn't impose these tariffs. The Trump administration would say, well, we do have the authority to do it. And so we would violate the trade agreement, and then Canada and Mexico could then retaliate. My hope is that we wouldn't impose tariffs on trading partners with whom we have trade agreements. And the USMCA is the single most important of all of those trading agreements. So, again, my hope is that we can keep, at the very least, keep those countries separate.
All right. Clark Packard, a research fellow for trade policies at the libertarian-leaning Cato Institute. We appreciate it. By the end of the presidential campaign, Donald Trump was promising tax cuts for just about everyone. Can he pull that off? We're talking taxes next. Countdown 2024 is brought to you by LMU Loyola Law School, where students ignite justice, lls.edu/radio.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. Donald Trump promised tax breaks for so many different specialized groups of Americans and pockets of the economy that it's easy to lose track. So as a quick review, here are Trump's pledges when it comes to who's going to get their taxes cut under a second Trump administration. Tax cuts on tips for service industry workers, tax cuts on overtime pay, cutting taxes on Social Security payments, tax cuts for first responders and members of the military, tax deductions on auto loan interest payments. And at one point, Trump even promised a total end to federal income taxes to be replaced by revenues from tariffs.
Well, let's take that big one first. Ed McCafferty is a longtime tax attorney, teaches tax law and policy at USC's Gould School of Law. So, Ed, I mean, the U.S. didn't always have an income tax. I think it wasn't until, what, the early part of the 1900s, and maybe I think once during the Civil War. So we didn't always have an income tax. Could Trump actually get away with doing that, getting rid of the income tax?
Yeah, that's right, Charles. And no is the answer. We had it. The modern income tax started in 1913. It was a relatively modest tax until World War II. But ever since World War II, the individual income tax has been the major source of revenue. And, you know, the numbers you were talking about in your last segment would not really, in terms of increased revenue from tariffs, would not come close to replacing what we get from the income tax. So it's a pipe dream. It's a long run matter to get rid of the income tax. Maybe eventually we see that, and we see the income tax replaced with a wage tax or a sales tax. But that's not going to happen in the next year, which is our time frame for what's going on now.
A recent report estimated that Trump's tax policies could add trillions of dollars to the national debt over the next decade. How realistic are his policies?
Yeah, that's really the issue, Margaret. You put your finger on it. And to put some numbers in front of your trillions, I think we start with the idea of extending the tax cuts that Trump put in place with the Republican Congress in 2017. That's the one major legislative act that Trump got done in his first 4 years, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017. That's expiring. Many of its provisions are expiring at the end of 2025. To make it permanent, which has become a vow of all Republicans, to make it permanent would cost between $4 and $5 trillion. And then all that Christmas tree list, those laundry list of everybody gets a benefit and nobody pays taxes, and if this campaign kept going, we'd all be getting refunds. That's just going to add to that. So right now, unless we get money from tariffs, unless Elon Musk comes in and cuts a bunch of so-called government waste, which sounds like the entitlement programs, we're going to struggle to even make the tax cuts from 2017 permanent. And we won't have much money to do anything else.
So did Trump basically sell people a bill of goods that, of course, will be taxed?
Well, you know, to be fair to him, he played the role of a politician. He wouldn't be the first person to do that. Certainly, it's a good time to be billionaires. We can take Bernie Sanders' tax plan to eliminate billionaires. That's not going to happen. But I think what we see, what we'll see among the other things is another thing we often see in tax politics, a kind of feeding frenzy. There's a political wisdom in putting more tax cuts on the table than you can afford, and then letting the special interest fight it out among themselves in terms of who's going to pony up in campaign contributions to get the goodies. So I expect we're going to see a year of infighting to get the goodies that are no doubt coming, but we've overpromised, and I think we're going to underdeliver.
Aside from extending and making permanent the 2017 tax cuts that you were talking about earlier, what other of his proposals do you foresee actually being implemented?
Yeah, and that's where I think, too, you're going to have the feeding frenzy. So we'll have to see. I think, you know, Trump will like the idea of keeping some uncertainty in people battling. I see a whittled down tips provision. You know, Kamala Harris kind of countered Trump's call to eliminate the tax on tips by narrowing it to people who are getting sub minimum wage, really just limiting it to waiters and casino dealers. That helped you get Nevada. And it's not very costly. So I could see tips. I could see maybe reducing the tax on Social Security benefits with some limits. I don't see much else. I don't see the state and local tax deduction, for example, because that really helps blue states like California and New York and Massachusetts. Until those states start producing more Republicans, I don't think they're going to be towards the top of the line. But no tax on tips, kind of more symbolic than costly. I think we'll see things like that.
All right, Ed McCaffrey, stick with us. He's a longtime tax attorney who teaches tax law and policy at USC's Gould School of Law. We'll continue this conversation next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the Monday edition of Countdown 2024. Along with Margaret Carrero, I'm Charles Feldman.
We are finishing our conversation on President-elect Donald Trump's tax policies with tax attorney and USC law professor Ed McCaffrey.
You know, Ed, even though they say the only two things that are definite in life are death and taxes, there are countries that don't have income taxes. Not many, but a handful. How do they get away with it? Is it just size?
Well, no, there's no government that doesn't spend money. And of course, it's a good question, Charles, and to point out that we have a lot of states that don't pay taxes, no, like Nevada, Texas, Florida. The red states have moved away from income taxes. And the way they get away from it is they substitute for income taxes other taxes like a sales tax or a national value-added tax, a wage tax, or drumroll, tariffs, which are going to work like a tax, as you talked about in your prior segment. So long term, it's been a Republican goal back to Ronald Reagan to reduce the reliance on the income tax, which falls on the returns to wealth as well as work, and get to a tax system that only taxes work, that doesn't tax wealthy people at all, that doesn't tax the return to savings. And I think we're getting there, but it's too ambitious to think we'll get there in 4 years.
All right. USC law professor Edward McCaffrey. Thank you very much, Ed. Coming up on tomorrow's countdown, for some 10 years, maybe more, Democrats and opponents of Donald Trump, they've repeatedly told us that Trump's values and character do not represent who we are as Americans. So what does that mean about the American character when Trump just keeps on winning? Countdown 2024, brought to you by LMU Loyola Law School, where students ignite justice, lls.edu/radio.